Blog Talk Radio.
Nobody ever told you.
All right, everyone. You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. That was the song Beautiful by a singer. Okay, sorry, I cannot think of his name. Apologize. Today's interview is with Pastor Greg Greer. He is from Chicago, Illinois. He also is known as Amir. And he'll correct me if my pronunciation is wrong. Amir Al Hakim Shakur. He is a public speaker, minister, also an American journalist. He is also a filmmaker, record producer, author, economist, and social activist. Greer is the founder of Freedom First International and a prominent civil rights leader. Also, Greer is a leader with the United Nations League of Nations with Assemblies Consortium, Lawn Fact, as well as a global system. Also, I'd like to say Greer is lectured globally, election on global diversity, especially establishing social and civic engagement, the history of Dr. Martin Luther King, human rights, AIDS, HIV, and communities, American practice of government, leadership, activism, youth in America, and the African-American experience, amongst other topics. Greer has addressed conferences, universities, and religious institutions across urban America. Greer is a specialist in criminal justice, restorative justice, organization leadership, and victim advocacy. Greer has advocated for some of the biggest civil rights cases in America, including the Tamir Rice case, Alton Sterling, C. Mudd Crosby, and the George Stanley Jr. case. How are you this afternoon, Pastor Greer?
Hey, I'm here and I'm alive, so I guess that is a blessing. It's a blessing.
Yes, you've been busy. I'm just a bio here. You have been busy. You're an economist. That means you're smart. You're smart, Ian.
Well, you know, hey, that's subjective to who you ask. But, hey, you know, we do what we can do. Well, my degree is actually in criminal justice and restorative justice. That's what I actually went to school for. And I'm working on a doctorate right now, a master's doctorate, and that's based upon faith, faith-based. But, you know, hey, it's about helping the people at the tail end of the day.
Yes, sir, it is. It is. That's why I still do the show. It's not because of money. It's because I believe in what I'm doing, and I believe and agree with people like you. We may not be best friends, but we share the same vision and cause.
Okay.
I believe in what you're doing.
Without a doubt. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So you want to talk about things that are going here in America, the country of America.
Yeah.
Starting with Chicago?
Yeah, let's get at it. Let's talk about current topics.
Okay. Yes, sir. I want to ask you one more question. Are you still writing for that famous newspaper magazine? Because I didn't see it here. I'm looking and looking.
Huffington Post. Yeah, if you Google Greg Greer Huffington, you can pull up all of my articles. I am not a contributor to Huffington Post anymore. I actually contribute to the front lines of Greg L. Greer, A Political America. And then I have the Chicago Urban Daily, which is a Chicago local trade, which I am growing from scratch. And I am also working on a new national media organization called Black America World News. So those are my current projects. Yeah.
Oh, great. Great. So let's start with Chicago's current topic.
Well, you know, first of all, you know, I guess I should start by saying thank you for having me on the show. And
you're more
I definitely
than welcome.
Appreciate your, I appreciate your work as well. So gun violence is an issue that has affected multiple communities around the country. And this particular weekend, I organized with a Catholic priest named Father Flager. Some folks know him. He's a national. He's known around the country, but he's based out of Chicago. And we organized a protest against gun violence, which basically closed down a major interstate in Chicago, which is the Dan Ryan Expressway. So it was done to protest the city's high gun violence rates. And, you know, we are trying our best as the advocacy on the ground here to really get a grasp on saving lives and stopping the loss of life and the bloodshed in our community. As many folks around the country have heard, Chicago has very specifically high gun violence rates and homicide rates, I should say, as well as community violence. So, I haven't shared the picture with you this evening. I've been really busy. Myself, Father Flager, Reverend Jesse Jackson, we're all part of this organizing event, and quite a few more advocates. And basically, it was a successful march. Maybe about 10,000 people, just short of that, came out, and it was a moment. It lasted for about 3 hours, and it was a time just to draw and highlight attention to what's going on in Chicago. Our president has said he's going to help us, and I don't take much stock into those types of conversations, but, you know, we have to do what we have to do, because every week, right, we lose women, men, children, especially brown and black boys and men, to senseless gun violence. It has to stop.
Yes, sir. Have you talked to President Trump personally?
I have not. From the moment that President Trump was announcing his election, and even the point of the hours after he was elected, I was organizing a protest.
He did promise to help Chicago.
For myself and my crowd, we have to teach our people, Angela, that, you know, it is one thing to have resources from the government. It's one thing to go to them or go to City Hall or go to the State House for that matter. But we really have to teach our community self-sufficiency, because as you look at the day and age and what's going on now in D.C., you see the cutback of affirmative action. Kids are having problems with funding going to school. Those types of funds and resources are getting cut down, some outwardly and some closed covertly by the Trump administration. And they have made it, and I would say this is a subjective opinion, but it's a very pronounced opinion. They have made it very, very hard for people of color, and they really want to set things back. And this is a subjective opinion. I believe they want to set it back to maybe the 50s or the 40s or the 30s, when a time when Jim Crow ruled the land and people of color did not have a lot of rights, starting with African Americans or Black Americans of color, whatever you choose to call us. But, you know, again, we have to learn self-sufficiency. We have to learn how to organize in our communities. We have to learn how to organize our businesses and our economic dollars, because that is where the power structure and the power flow is. If we can organize our economic dollars, then we can start from there and work all the way down.
Yes, sir. That is true. That is correct. Economics. Mm-hmm. What do you think about people on disability, Black people that are on disability? Do you think that is using the system?
I really don't have any subjective opinion about disability. I mean, I don't believe that everybody who gains those types of benefits is abuser of the system. you know, and to me, it's not really a conversation where I put a lot of stock into.
Yes, sir.
You know, at this point.
That's not the topic. Okay. So, you know, you're talking about the gun violence here in Florida, Pastor Greer. As you know, a jury gave 4/5 the family to a family of a black man killed by a Florida cop. His name is Gregory Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-N. Gregory Vaughn Hill Jr., he was 30. He killed him in 2014 because he was playing music too loudly in his own garage while drunk. And he was also a black man. So I'm just saying homicide, justifiable homicide and all that. The jury awarded him $4. But the point I'm trying to make is you have to be a registered voter to serve on a jury. And that's been brought up before on the on Show Talk with Angela Bowen, who you want to put Pastor Lionel Gant. You remember that?
Vaguely, but yeah, I believe I do.
Yeah, about the cases and things. Now that's murder. That's
yep.
Not just black on black. That he was really you know, that's another murder here in Florida where I'm located in the state of Florida. But I'm closer to Alabama than I am the state capital.
Right.
I'm like 45 minutes from Alabama, an hour and a half from the state capital.
Right.
Twice, three times. Christopher Newman shot him three times. Once in the head, twice in the abdomen, through the door of a garage.
Right. Well, can I?
Go ahead, sir.
No, go ahead. I thought you were. Go ahead, please.
No, go ahead, talk. I'm just
talking about murder. Well, what I wanted to say was, you know, there is an epidemic, and I really want to be careful about saying there's an epidemic because, you know, we don't want to misdirect the narrative, and I think half the problem is that it's a misdirected narrative. Now, there is a problem with the way that law enforcement addresses people of color, and they will deny it and they will say that it's not. But, you know, the mandate of most, and I would say if there's one that misses this mandate, then, you know, I would be amiss. But most law enforcement agencies, either citywide, countywide, municipal, state, whatever it is, they say that they are there to do one thing, and they will have this mandate in their mission statement, and that is to do what? To serve and protect, right? That's
yes,
what
sir.
They say that they're there to do. So, you know,
yes,
and
sir,
I think that a lot of times with American policing, they really have to go back to the basics, and they have to look at where it is, and how they proceed, because a lot of these guys are not getting the message. Now, the homicide rate of police kills with African American citizens or American citizens in specific is extremely low. But the unfortunate thing is that it happens. Okay, so we have and those things are highlighted through the media, and they're highlighted through social media as well. So, you know,
Yes, sir. Pastor Grill, but the reason for that, black people, according to the census, which I now believe may be a higher rate than 2010, was that the census, which they're telling me is a lie, the census always has, and they're trying to make me believe, but I served on the census, that we're only 12 or 13%. Well, possibly. So I'm not going to say definitely, but I did work on the census. So, and I trained. So what I'm saying is, for us to be that 300 and let's say 26 million people in America, for the police to kill like that, and for us to be so many of in the prison, 60 to 65%, maybe more, I mean, something's wrong.
Well, and that's the point that I was getting to, Sister Angela. You know, we really have to look. We have to overhaul the American policing system. We have to look and see exactly what is wrong with this system in order to overhaul it. And I'll tell you what, this is a system that is built and is anti-people of color. And they can say all that they want to that these devices don't exist, but this system is very divisive. So we have to look at that, and we have to be able to address it. We have to teach our children how not to challenge the system, but to go around the system and to understand the system, because understanding is half the battle, you know. And I'm not asking for anybody to teach their children to run away from the system, or our community members to run away from the system. But here's the thing: if you know for a fact that you're playing with a loaded gun, and, you know, why would you shoot that loaded gun if it has live bullets in it? My thing is, you really have to be careful. You have to not play with that. You have to put it away. In our community, we have to not play with it. The NRA is a whole nother issue, Angela. Any sensible discussion about American gun violence, the problem here, we've got to acknowledge that guns aren't going away. You know, we have to admit to ourselves that we live in a country with so many guns, progress is going to be measured incrementally. You know, we have to think about that because, you know, there are certain truths, but the right to bear arms was enshrined in the Constitution of the United States of America. You know, so, I mean, the gun violence issue is a provocative issue. You know, most people do not know that when the NRA was, and I want to know if you know this, when the NRA was founded, it was founded to take the guns back from soldiers, black soldiers, who had worked on either the side of the Union or side of the Confederacy. That's what that was founded for, to take those guns back and the rights that they were given. That's what the NRA's job was. Take the black guns.
It had the history of it is racist, very extremely racist. In current days, what keeps the guns, I'll always believe is racism. I'm sorry.
Well, listen, I'm telling you, if you look at, okay, so the, from Charlton.
It's structured. Racism is structured. It's structured from the top, from the bottom up, from the top down. It's structured. It's meant to be that way. It's meant
exactly
to have even businesses. Well, we have to go to them and ask for everything. It's passed the nominal prices. I just paid the month before $224.68 for a key.
Mm-hmm.
For my vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It wasn't even the dealership.
Okay. All right. If you look at the NRA, more specifically in the presidents of the NRA and their policies and procedures, you will see that those policies and procedures do not help those of us in the African American or oppressed minority communities, because a lot of the problems with gun violence. And when you have some of these cities and the amount of people you have per capita that live in these cities, one of the issues with gun violence is that, you know, it's going to affect people. Innocent lives have been taken because people have been in the line of gunfire. Children's lives have been lost here in Chicago. I know in a lot of other cities that there are similarly suited stories of innocent lives being taken by unnecessary gun violence. So, you know, and it's being highlighted because it's going out of the inner cities in urban America, but now it's going into white America is being influenced by this.
Yes.
You know, so now it's being placed.
In Florida, I call it Mr. Trump's territory here in Florida because he has South Florida, he has this mansion there.
Mar-a-Lago is the name of it.
Yes, it's South Florida. And that was like, 15 miles for him, 20 miles for him?
Mm-hmm.
Mass shooting. He killed a bunch of other students.
Yeah.
And that's the second one here. And then that was
Here's my thing. Can I just say this,
karate.
Though? Yeah, let me just say this. Angela, you got to hear this. There are approximately 265 million privately owned guns in the U.S., according to researchers from Harvard University and Northeastern. So let me just say this to you again. Like I said before, guns aren't going away, and we gotta figure out what we are going to do. And I mean, our fight has to be a fight that is common sense and logistics. We can't tell 265 million people not to have our own handguns. But what we can do is we can look at areas and how these things are being affected. And I'd say offenders who abuse those laws maybe should get harsher penalties. The first time you get caught, here's an example. The first time you get caught, Angela, and you're an ex-felon, the first time you get caught with a handgun, being an ex-felon, and you've already spent X amount of years in the federal penitentiary because of that, I think you should get at least 15 to 20 for, you know, having a handgun, because these are the problems. Or let's say the first time you murder an innocent child, that's automatically 50 or more.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because
right.
If we do not stiffen the laws, and I don't really have a good measurement. I need to do more research on as far as sentencing and how it really, really works. I need to have that conversation with someone. Maybe you and I can have that conversation with someone who's in that line of work. But we really got to think about how to stiffen the penalties on offenders to make it fair to abuse the law. But the only other part about that is because it's so jacked up that, you know, there's a flip side of that, and the other fight is then they will instantly start penalizing innocent people. But what I'm saying that is, if it's clear that you had a gun and you shouldn't have had a gun and you have had prior problems, then I think you need to get booked. I think you need to get hit, because if we don't start attacking and going after the offenders, then those are the ones who are causing the problems in our communities. And black-on-black violence, violence in the communities is spilling over. And then we can worry about the other portion after that. But the abusers got to be stopped right away. And we have the resources to do it. But what's happening is the NRA is stopping us from doing it, because any laws on the books that look like it's going to mandate gun, we call them gun sense laws. Anything that's gun sense, the NRA stops, because they feel like you're trying to control the flow of guns. So they stop us. And I'm going to tell you what that is. For me, that is what's hurting. That's one of the major things that's hurting to get any good, effective gun laws passed. The gun lobby is so strong, and they have their hands in a lot of these politicians' pockets, including the president of the United States, you know, that we are in an uphill battle.
Yes, sir. And according to Business Insider, Pastor Greer, the shooting at the Capitol Convention Hall in Annapolis, Maryland, and I know Chicago has a high murder rate. This was printed in, it says on June 28th, that there have been 154 mass shootings here in the United States, and that's not counting places like Chicago, because I was watching that. I hope it's getting better there. I pray it is getting better. I don't just hope. I pray.
But, you know, people like us who are on the ground, we are trying to do our best. You know, I'm in a lot of national fights in and out of Chicago, and I'm growing into the international arena now, and I'm starting to work on some international issues as well. But all I can say at this point right now, Angela, is that we really have to find the right level of advocacy too, you know, who understands half the part of the fight is understanding what the fight is all about. And, you know, a lot of times we go out on passion, and, you know, we know we want to see it stop, but we don't know what it is, who to talk to, you know, the right groups to lobby in order to make it happen. You know, and these are the types of things that we have to start learning more when it comes to organizing our communities.
And to simply call someone crazy just because they're different, it's kind of similar to what they did to the slaves, but they enslaved them. You get what I'm saying when you're different? So them calling these white men that are doing these mass killings crazy, to me, they're not crazy. They're murderers. And yeah. Unfortunately, black people shouldn't kill each other at all for the truth about it, but it's happening.
Yeah.
And I believe there have been, for 2018, the data, according to Business Insider, data from gun violence, RCHOP also shows more than 7,000 people have died from gun-related violence so far this year, and more than 13,300 others were injured. And guns aren't going away. Right? They're not.
So you
so
said
it's... answer?
Say that again?
There are... It says, according to BusinessInsider.com, it was written by Malia Robinson, Sky Gold, and Samantha Lee. This is what I'm reading from BusinessInsider.com, the website. I also have the newspaper. June 28, 2018, at 5:29 p.m. They're saying that June 28th, we were 177 days into the year, and already we've had almost half the numbers of deaths.
Well,
and there's also some data from Gun Violence Archive also shows that more than 7,000 people have died from gun-related violence so far this year. And 13,300 were injured. And it's usually, because Americans are more likely to die from gun violence than anything, 11,000 people are killed in firearm assaults each year.
I think fear drives that. Well, you know, let's not, again, we really got to be careful about, you know, our subjective opinions, because we really need to know what it is that's really driving a lot of the issues. And, I mean, there's multiple issues. You know, people don't have gainful employment. You know, there is a level of fear in the community, but I'd say that on the flip side of that, and this is subjective opinion, you know, unemployment brings a whole multitude of issues. You know, people don't have good jobs, so some of them tend to go to other means in order to finance themselves and stay alive. It's robbing, stealing, you know, drugs. The drug issue is not going away in our community either, and it is one of the biggest problems within our community. You know, back in the early 90s, you know, crack was one of the biggest issues, but now you know what the big drug of concern is, right? You know what that is, Angela?
I believe meth, cocaine, or heroin, opioid abuse.
Well,
that's heroin, basically, when they can't get the opioid painkillers or whatever, once they become addicted,
right?
They go to heroin, usually. Yeah, I know,
right,
because
right.
Here in Florida, I recently found out about 2 weeks ago that all the Florida sheriffs, including the county that I live in, they are suing Big Pharma. I did a show about that last year. Washington. They're suing Big Pharma, and soon after that, the lawsuit starts. So
Opioid addiction is, you know, because these drugs are more easier to get, and you know, people find all kinds of ways to get these drugs. But what happens is, you know, because they are what they are, with prolonged use pain relievers, a lot of them, you know, people like that because it gives you not a high, but it gives you a certain type of high. And, you know, what the problem is, as you already know, that they are instantly addictive, but heroin, opioids like heroin, in a very short time result in death, you know, and the addiction level is so high with it that, you know, even people who were prescribed it, you know, if they don't trim off of it right away, then you know, even the doctors say that they are dangerously addictive.
Yes, they are.
So,
they are, but.
So, mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, you know, again, you know, our community has, with lack of resources, we have a lot of issues that confront us. And when I say our community, you know, I'm happy to say that myself, I'll tell you this, Angela, I didn't identify as someone who was a black conscious person. But I am identifying with the conscious community because I feel like in order to help our community, someone has to lead our community. That's not saying that I'm prejudiced and that I downplay anybody else's community. That's saying that I have decided to gauge our community and gain an understanding of the unique problems of our community. Because I'm a specialist, I can help our people out. You know, 13 years ago, I worked in corporate America, and I was a big time corporate exec, and I was making probably about $80,000 a year. I had a corporate car, had a house with a swimming pool down in Florida, and you know, and I was on a plane probably three weeks out of the month somewhere, traveling somewhere, and I tell you what, it became to the extent I had to question what it is that I was doing. If what was I doing helping my community in the problems that are truly confronting our community? So I said, you know what, I'm going to use my resources to help my community. And it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle. But as you read in my bio, you know, I have had some of the biggest civil rights cases in America to date that I have led with Tamir Rice, the young man who was shot down in Cleveland, Ohio. We are still working on the Alton Sterling case out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Samaje Crosby was a young baby who was murdered, young toddler, and they found her body in the house where she lived under a couch. And since then, no one has been charged. That was I believe 2 years ago. So, you know, there are a lot of national issues that confront our people. But again, you know, the advocacy a lot of times is passionate, but they don't really have the organizational, the logistical knowledge in order to fight these things. And the key word of the moment is we got to understand our fight, and we have to strategize in our fight. You know, Angela, if I put you in the ring with Mike Tyson at his prime, he's gonna whoop you up and down, ain't he? You know what I mean? But if I gave you a little bit of insight and strategy to say, hey, the first time he threw a punch, dodge that punch, and then you know what I'm saying. And maybe if you fall out on the ground, you know, when you fight Mike Tyson, maybe you know it'd be considered a knockout, but you might get the prize money and go home and still live to tell about it, right?
I know that was a real
crude example, but I don't know. I guess in my.
I mean, it's prime. He was something else. I mean, he really was.
He was a monster. He was a monster, wasn't he? I wouldn't have wanted to be nowhere near that dude.
Yeah, he getting that boxing ring. Shoot.
With those black shorts on, he was ready to do some damage, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. I used to watch it from TV. I never got to see him in person. But I was going to say, you were talking about opioids. The show I did was about the city of Everett in Washington State. They sued Purdue Pharma, and allegedly Purdue allowed the oxycodone, a form of the opioid painkiller oxycodone, to flood the back market and cause the epidemic. Purdue is responsible for this.
Purdue?
In 1996, Purdue. Yeah, that's
okay.
This city. I did a show on this last year. Yeah.
I see.
That's what I want to take. You're talking about drugs. Heroin is a popular drug.
Right. Right. Good old heroin, huh? It's not gone. And you know, it's not going to go away. I mean, crack is still out there as well, you know, because of the easy accessibility. But, you know, you really don't hear too much about crack, and I don't know why. I haven't spent any time on it, but, you know, you hear things about opioids these days, you know. So, I mean, again, these are battles. These are battles that we have to deal with, and, you know, these are things that are confronting our community, you know, and, you know, if crack is back, you know, I really don't know, you know, but I know, I'm sure it hasn't gone anywhere.
I know crack hasn't gone anywhere either. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. And they're not paying that much attention to crack because it's mostly considered, I don't know if it actually is, a black drug. And supposedly a cheaper drug, a cheaper form of cocaine.
Yeah.
But Reverend Al Sharpton once said on his show on MSNBC that they should have the same sense involved. Crack cocaine and crack. That something's wrong with that. And that he said they do it because it's mostly a black, they consider it mostly a black drug. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. And that's probably why it's not on the map, because as long as it's killing us and it's not killing other folks, then it's not the problem, you know. But the Center for Disease Control and Prevention announced in 2015 that the rate of heroin overdoses nearly quadrupled the amount of crack overdoses. So I'm saying it's something out there, and, you know, again, this is, you know, I don't want to speak on something that I really don't have any knowledge about, but, I mean, you know, there's a reason for that, and maybe, you know, maybe somebody like you can do a show about that, you know, what the crack versus opioids versus heroin and what we should know about it in 2018, right?
I already have. That's what's putting a lot of people in prison. Including more women in prison now than ever. I mean, it's a lot of women in prison.
Wow, it's crazy. Well, you know,
that's what a lot of, some of it's for fraud, things like that, but sometimes people deliberately turn people in for stuff. You know what I'm saying? We do it to just to hurt each other. And there's no fraud.
Well,
you spend $10,000 fighting something. People just do it for the meanness of it, the evil of it. Just to see you spend
$10,000 or $20,000.
I've seen that happen to people.
Yeah. Crack addicts who were largely black and disenfranchised and economically bereaved, you know, really don't have a hope in 2018 America. And, you know, there is a level, especially now, you know, with these particular neocons who are in the White House, you know, and I don't put a lot of stock into the political question anymore. I'm not telling anybody else not to, but I am, you know, apolitical, meaning that, you know, I understand that things are political, but I choose not to go that way. I choose to go the way of the people, and all of my solutions are based upon what needs to be done as the best recourse for the people. And, you know, I'll work with politicians, you know, I don't have a problem. I take that back. I do have a problem with a lot of them in the way that they do things. But we have got this, just like I said before, and I don't want to sound repetitive, but we got to stop running down the city hall to the mayor's office and some of these city councilmen and aldermen or trustees or whatever you have, and expect these guys to have the answer for our problems, because they just don't. And, you know, and the real answer has to start right there in your household, on your block. And, you know, we got to start organizing block to block, block clubs and that sort of thing, because, you know, a block club can probably do a lot more for you at this point than the President of the United States can. I'm just going to be honest with you.
That's true, so, because they've seen they, it's perfect. They seem to want the impeachment, and they seem not. So I don't know if this is all publicity or if they're serious. I don't know what's going on. But it looked like they would impeach him by now if they were going to. I guess they even had something over his head. I don't know what it's called. Maybe it's called entertainment. Who knows? I'm not certain anymore.
Right.
Because I don't see Mueller coming forward about the president. So, you know.
Right. Right. Yep. So.
Yeah, so one of the answers. You should have a block party, get together, have a block meeting, a party. I mean, what are you saying? What's the answer to this?
It's simpler. It's, Angela, it's simpler than that. The answers are that we have to understand. We have to start teaching our people in simple conversations what time it is. Like I told you, I was in corporate America. If I dare tell somebody, I am a specialist and I have moved towards consciousness, the conscious community. If I told somebody I was a conscious-minded person, especially black consciousness, you know, I probably would have lost my job in corporate America 13 years ago, right? You know, because they would have said, well, this is a militant brother here. We need to get him going quick, you know. But what we have to do, I say all that to say that, you know, when the perception of the population is primarily people of color, then their response is to demonize and punish, right? That's how they treat us.
When it's white,
then they search for answers, right? Think of the difference between, like we said, the drug epidemics and you know, of the 90s and now. How many people were thrown in jail?
They did not treat them. They were put in jail. They did not treat them the same as they doing this oxycodone or these hydrocodone or whatever. Oxycodone. It's not a big thing. They're suing for them. They're suing because a lot of white people are because it's through prescriptions, and they went to heroin. But when it was black people, they didn't care how many black people were going to prison for crack who were actually addicts. Were addicts.
When crack was the inner city drink.
They tear down.
Yes. I'm saying when crack was an inner city drug on a street corner a drug, and most of the gangs and everything, when they terrorized black America, it wasn't an issue. But when it spilled over into white America,
then
you started seeing Reagan and the folks react. You started seeing federal drug actions being passed, and that led
to the white community. They don't care who dies. We kill each other.
Yes.
That's the way I feel about some whites. Don't care. The government does.
And what we're saying, let me say this, Angela, please. What we're saying is we're not prejudiced. I just want to say this one quick thing. It's not us being prejudiced, but if we can teach the black community just to be open and self-sufficient, then that's going to cure a lot of the problems, even on the federal and national level.
Be self-sufficient, not to depend.
Hey, do for you. Stop running down. Stop looking for Trump to give it to you. Stop looking for the mayor to give it to you. Stop looking for your governor to give it to you, because guess what? They're not going to give it to you. Let's get it.
Okay.
Let's get it on our own.
Yes, sir.
Right?
I understand exactly what you're saying. Okay, we got about 1 minute.
Right.
I thank you, and the answer is to get it on our own, become self-sufficient.
Do for self.
And that help employment. Employ each other, is that what you're saying? Learn to trust each other, come together in some sort of agreement, and teach our children about what's going to have an open conversation. Is that what you are saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. That makes sense.
Free yourself. Free yourself. Let's start that hashtag, free yourself, okay?
Free yourself hashtag. You want me to put this on the show, free yourself hashtag?
Free yourself.
We've got to
free
come
yourself,
together.
People.
Because guns aren't going away. Right. We've got to come together. Yeah, and help each other. Is that what you're saying? But black people don't
that's
trust each other.
No, that's it. You're right. You got it.